AIM Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. Morning Drive with Nick Kale, Braden Gall, and Derek Mason. On Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, 7:01 here on a Tuesday, hour two off and running. Coming up 1 hour from now, Jeremy Roenick, NHL on NBC analyst. I'm sure JR will have things to say about the Preds. I know he's not supposedly rooting for teams, but he made it clear on this show multiple times he was looking forward to coming to Nashville in May and hopefully June. So we'll talk to Jeremy Roenick 1 hour from now. Your call, 737-1025. D-Mace, you wanted to get to something before we
broke? Yeah, because I'm looking at this team, and I'm trying to figure out, you know, when you look at, you know, Rocco Grimaldi, Arvidsson, and there may be Ryan Ellis. And then you start to look at the other teams within their division. And I just, last night I did this. And this might not mean anything. I don't know. Because when you look at those three guys on their team, I think a lot of Arvidsson and Grimaldi played exceptionally well, honestly. But he's 5'6". Arvidsson, 5'8". Ellis, I think he's 5'10", 5'9", somewhere around there. And then I started to look at these other teams just within their division. Winnipeg, the Blues, Dallas, and the Avalanche. There's no one under 5'11 on their team. I think, well, they might have like a 5'10 guy. But for the most part, these guys are 6'2", 6'3", 6'1", 6'6".
Well, this is why Poile went out and got guys like Boyle and
exactly.
Simmons. They needed heavier, bigger guys.
But what I'm saying is that the guys that the Predators, like the Arvidssons, the Grimaldis, and again, Grimaldi played well in the playoffs. But you saw a guy that was their number one goal getter in a season get neutralized. He just got wiped out completely. Because if he's 6'1", 6'2", I think he makes more of an impact in a game. But because of his size, now he's overcoming. I'm not saying that I would take Arvy on any team that I play on. Because the guy's just flat out. His hustle and everything else, he makes things happen. But when you get in the playoffs, it's a different story because now everybody's gunning to take you out. And I think because of his lack of size, it's going to be hard for him during the playoffs to get over that when you're playing against these bigger teams. And I don't know what the Nashville Predators do about it, because if this was Johansson, you know, or Josi or Forsberg that was the top goal getter, and I think they still would be able to do some things in the playoffs. This year didn't happen for some strange reason. But I think it's not for the lack of trying that Arvidsson couldn't get anything off. It was just they beat him up.
It's easier to neutralize a 5'8 player in the playoffs with that stifling defense when penalties aren't called as much. And this was the problem in his first year. He's 22 years old. They got into the playoffs. That was the 14-game run, 7-game series against Anaheim and San Jose. He had 2 points in 14 games. Then he bounced back and had 13 points in the run deep to the Stanley Cup. So he had 13 points there in that postseason. He had 9 points last year in two series. And so he scored 5 goals. He sort of answered those questions the last 2 years. Well, now he has a second playoffs in his career where he didn't really contribute much. So his first year, when you're 22 and you're 5'8", fine. It's understandable. He did bounce back, and again, he scored 5 times last year in the postseason in two series. So it's not like he was a contributor last year and the year before. It just does raise the question, like, you know, because Grimaldi was so good. I mean, it's hard to argue. I do think there is some element of the modern NHL that allows for those types of players. That's why David Poile said this. We would not have drafted Ryan Ellis in the first round if this was 1993. It just wouldn't, you know, the NHL is different. It's a speed skill game now, and that's why players like Grimaldi can find success. And Arvidsson, you can't. I don't know. I don't think there's enough data yet to say whether or not he is truly a playoff liability. There are he's got 2 seasons where he was in the postseason, and he has 2 seasons where he wasn't. He was very consistent and produced. So it's a valid question. I don't think we've got enough data to answer that question just yet. Next year, let's find out.
All right, let's get your calls. 615-737-1025, 737-1025. Bob in Antioch up next here on Morning Drive. What's going on, Bob?
I'm trying to be as positive as I can. I'm a
season ticket holder since day one, and I've renewed and everything. So, I mean, you know, realize you can't win and run deep every year. Like you guys, I watched them all year, and it just seems to me like there was an intangible that was missing. I felt all year that there was something that was missing, and this goes beyond what you saw on the ice, you know, like secondary scoring or power play, something beyond that. I never was able to figure out exactly what it might have been. Did you guys feel that way too? And if you did, what do you think it might have been?
Honestly, I think it was a killer instinct. I don't think they had that killer instinct. I don't think they had that, you know. And I said it. Why is it that when you're down, you got to play out of desperation? Because I guess desperation to them is that killer instinct, that, you know, staying focused and honing in on everything and just going at it. Now, last night, they might have played their best game of the whole series. But where was that in game four, game five, game one? You know, where was it then? That's why, to me.
Where was the defense?
Exactly.
At any point during the series.
To me, they were missing that killer instinct, that thing that when you walk into the skating rink, when you step on that ice, that you are going to dominate the team in front of you no matter what. Again, it's a bar that we set, not you, not the media, not the fans, not anyone else. It's a bar that we set as a team, that even if we win, if we fall below it, we are pissed off. We are mad. We're going to make sure we come back the next game and play even harder, even faster, even rougher. We're going to do things that this team didn't think we could do. I don't think they ever had that. They didn't have that killer instinct, I don't think.
And I also think, too, in regards to his question about the power play, and look, you know, you heard Chris Mason on this show and on the broadcast say it's beyond analysis. I mean, don't you think they've tried everything? Like, there's only so many combinations you can throw out on the ice for a power play, whether it's four forwards and a defenseman, three defensemen and two forwards, this guy, that guy. I mean, you have X amount of players on your team. You have X amount of combinations. Peter Laviolette tried as many probably as he could. I don't have the actual statistical amount of variations that he rolled out, but at some point, these guys have just got to be more aggressive and put pucks on net and just attack.
Well, and that's what they did last night. I mean, they were so aggressive. They just were, as soon as they got into the zone, they were firing pucks at the net, and it led to, eventually in the third period, a lot of really good scoring chances. They just couldn't finish on any of those opportunities. They had the chances to beat Bishop. I mean, Cali Yarncroke hits the post, right? I mean, they had chances to Forsberg has a one-on-one with Bishop and a clear shot at it. There's so many chances they had, and Ben Bishop was up to the challenge every single time. I think that killer instinct that you're talking about, that extra thing, I think a majority of that does go on the players, but that's also on the coaching staff too. It's on everybody in the room to have the right chemistry, or whatever you want to call it, whatever it is, whether it's message or, you know, confidence or whatever. We can pick a percentage, right? Oh, 72% on the players. Well, there is some percentage of this that belongs to the coaching staff. The coaching staff is responsible for getting its team prepared to play every single game. Sure, in the professional ranks, we put more of that on the athlete in every sport than we do the coaching staff. But a coaching staff makes a lot of money for a reason, and they're there for a reason. And whatever they said didn't work.
Pull a goalie out of the net when the power play.
Just go 6-on-4.
Exactly.
You know that they can ice the puck on a power play, right?
Yeah, I know that, but still, you got to do something, man. Something's got to work.
All right, 615-737-1025. We'll come back. More Preds calls. We're going to get to some NFL draft discussion this hour. We've got Jeremy Roenick to kick off the 8 o'clock hour. Busy, busy week as we lead you right into one of the biggest stretches in Nashville sports history, of course, with the NFL draft coming up Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. But right now, let me tell you about my friends at Hippo Insurance. Guys, as you are well aware, the Nashville area real estate market is booming, as my wife and I have recently found out. But the one thing most people don't think about enough when buying a new house is their homeowner's insurance. Well, you can get a quote in 60 seconds and buy a policy in 4 minutes, like I did with Hippo Insurance. At Hippo, they believe that people deserve better with home insurance, and I couldn't agree more now being a customer. Hippo is smart insurance for the modern home that covers everything you need and nothing you don't. Why would you not want to pay 25% less? Here's what you have to do. For modern home insurance for less, go to myhippo.com/thegame to get your instant quote and save up to 25%. It only takes 60 seconds. Switch today and save. That's myhippo.com/thegame. myhippo.com/thegame.
Game plan traffic.
This report is sponsored by Access by BMW. Enjoy now, commit never with Access by BMW. Switch between BMWs as often as you prefer. Learn more at accessbybmw.com.
A new wreck is working on Centennial Boulevard just east of Briley Parkway. That's Centennial Boulevard east of Briley Parkway. We also have a crash on Old Hickory Boulevard just west of Cane Ridge Road. And an overturned vehicle blocking the right lane on eastbound 24 just west of New Hope Road. That's east.
You said after game five that you wanted to make sure that this group didn't have any regrets. Do you feel that the way that this game played out, are there any regrets?
That's a tough question. I mean, we gave ourselves a chance. I mean, we had a breakaways and we had 2-on-1. Yarni hit the crossbar. Overtime, it's a one shot game. You know, any shot can go in, and you know, obviously, unfortunately for us, it went the wrong way. You know how we see it, and I mean, if you look at the whole series, I don't want to break it down game by game, but I don't know about the regrets. I still feel like we didn't necessarily. At times, we didn't find our maybe best game. You know, I don't. Not taking anything away from Dallas. I thought that they played really well and, you know, eventually deserved the win.
That was Pecorine last night. He doesn't want to break it down, but that's what Morning Drive is for. We're breaking it down until 10 o'clock.
Yeah, we are here to break it down, and we are here to tell you why we think the series went the way it went and why we think they lost last night.
And we could be part therapist.
Yeah, we could be a therapist. We can be anything we want to. I stayed at Holiday Inn within the last 10 years, so I am qualified. No.
Did you take those little soaps and towels with you when you went?
No, I didn't. No.
Are you kidding? No. He wouldn't. He brings his own soap and towels.
Yeah, I put my shirt over the pillowcase. I don't know what people be doing to a pillowcase. But anyway, at least I've talked so much about setting the bar high, and I just got finished talking about it, setting the bar high each game for themselves. I want to take my hat off to them for, in an elimination game, coming out and just throwing everything at the wall and trying to find out what stick. You saw Peter, make line changes, put groupings together that we hadn't seen. Watson might have played his best game. He was out there knocking people around, and he went from one side of the ice, knocked somebody down. Then he skated all the way to the other side of the ice and knocked somebody down. He had a goal. I mean, Watson played a really good game last night. I think Pekka, after the game, I think he got the third star,
he was great.
He got star number three. Yeah. What's the lowest one? Three
stars.
Yeah, he got third star, I think.
It's like Bishop, DEFCON. DEFCON.
Yeah,
DEFCON 5 is actually the lowest.
Exactly.
DEFCON. DEFCON 1 is Bishop when we're all going to die.
Well, second star.
He and Bishop combined to stop 97 of 100
crazy
total shots.
Well, he stopped 49 himself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they did everything possible to win that game, but win. Because we talked to Pete Weber yesterday, and he said, Pete Weber said they have to be comfortable with playing a 1-1 game going in overtime or playing a 2-1 game. They got to be comfortable with that. I think last night they were. I think after they scored their goal, then Dallas came back and scored the goal. I think they were like, okay, if we can just keep this like this going back and forth, we at least give ourselves an opportunity to win either in regulation or overtime. I think they were comfortable with the 1-1
game. But the way the flow transitioned, because the amount of shots the Preds got early, they were attacking. They had a dominant shot advantage. But after it was 1-0, Dallas slowly pulled the game back into what they wanted to do.
Yeah, they did. They made it more so of their
game.
And
they got more shots.
But you guys can, I think you guys would agree, is that the game started off, Preds scored their goal, Dallas scored theirs, and I think the second period. But the game was kind of back and forth. And all of a sudden, it was just this weird thing that happened. It was this offensive kind of explosion, but no scores. But there were odd man rushes and mistakes that both teams were making that was giving their offense an opportunity to score. And then all of a sudden, it shut down again.
Yeah, and it didn't feel like again, I thought the Preds' second period, I thought that was one of the best periods of hockey they played the entire series.
Yeah,
and
besides giving up the goal.
And they lost 1-0 in that period. That's the microcosm of the Preds' season, sort of to some degree. It wasn't like in the other games where there were long, extended chunks of time where you felt like one team dominated the other, mm-hmm. especially the third period. Just an absolutely phenomenal hockey game. If you're just an objective observer and you're watching hockey, it was
those two goalies. Oh my god!
Just like and the up and down action in the third period, the overtime. I mean, it was an exciting, dramatic, awesome hockey game. Take the outcome out of it, obviously. And the Preds got off to their hot start, which they have all season, all series long. The Dallas Stars have had slow starts in this game. And then they come back and they dominate in a big chunk of time. There were just periods, again, less extensive in this game, where Dallas would just have the puck. Instead of, you know, in previous games, it'd be 6 or 7 minutes of consecutive offensive zone time, it felt like. Again, I know the puck leaves the zone, but basically they're down in the Predators' defensive zone dominating. Last night it felt like those were limited to like 2 and 3 minutes, and then the Preds would get their 2 or 3 minutes in the other end, and it just felt more balanced. It felt, because of the desperation, that it felt more balanced. And, you know, as we're going to say every single segment of the show, why aren't you playing like that? Like, I see Granlund like recklessly throwing his body around. I see Kyle Turris recklessly throwing. Why are you not doing that on every shift of the playoffs? Because that is what it takes to win a Stanley Cup.
Well, I mean, Ben Bishop was like a fish out of water for like a 2 minute, like a minute or two period where they were just pecking. They were just pelting him. He was just flopping around like a fish that just got caught, and they threw it on a boat. He was just flopping. He lost his stick twice, and he's just going everywhere, and they're trying to pelt him with pucks. And then on the other hand, it was the same way.
They both lost their sticks.
It was like Pekka was getting pelted. He'd lose his stick, and then he'd get caught in an awkward position. It was the type of game that you enjoyed watching because you know both teams, at least both goalies, were giving it their all.
Yeah, and I think both defenses were good. I mean, excluding the outcome, and it's hard to exclude the outcome, but that was an exciting – I mean, you can't ask for much more from a 1-1 hockey game in regulation.
No, and the defense is an interesting conversation. It clearly was better for Nashville, but they're still – like, Jamie Benn probably should have had a hat trick last night. I mean, that dude dominated the series and hit a post in the first period, had another little backhand in the second period that probably should have gone in. I mean, they got lucky, too, to be in overtime with that game. Not to say that the Dallas Stars didn't also get some breaks when Cali Yarncroke hits a post in the third period. And I mean, they were
tours on a breakaway.
If you're going to save 50 shots, you're going to have to get lucky on a couple of them, right? Yeah. Like, that's just sort of the nature of the game. And so I thought the Preds' defense did show major steps forward and signs of life. It still doesn't mean that they played a good – perfect hockey game. They still allowed 2, 3, 4 minutes of possession here and there where Dallas was just in their zone, out skating, out working, beating them to pucks on it. Like, the one thing that stood out to me the most in this series across all six games, not necessarily last night, the ease with which Dallas could just carry the puck into the zone whenever they wanted to, and the opposite for Nashville. They could not carry possession of the puck into the offensive zone. It was far more dumping, and they just couldn't – it just wasn't comparable. Last night, again, and Forsberg was pretty offensive last night in terms of showing up, right? He had a few plays. Even on the first shift, the first second, he goes down the ice and fires one at Bishop. He was active, and you could see him, and he was being a good player on offense. There's one time where he gives the puck up in the neutral zone, just passes it back to the Ben Sagan-Redeloff line, who then just carries it into the zone and almost scores, and you're going, "What are you doing?"
Does that drive you
nuts? And he did it like 3 times in Game 5, and you're going, "Like, you have to have awareness of where you are on the ice and where your teammates are, and know that you've got to just dump it and get rid of it. Sometimes you have to punt, right? Like, that's."
But does that drive you nuts, knowing that as good as the Jofa line is, and is how much speed this team has and skill has, when they can't carry the puck like Dallas was able to do it, and they've got to revert to and rely on the dump and chase, like. When I watch dump and chase hockey beyond like a certain level, it drives me insane. I don't know.
Yeah,
if
I mean, that's probably the equivalent of like pitching duels and running the football and punting and playing defense. I mean, that from a stylistic standpoint, it's not aesthetically pleasing. It doesn't mean that the Jofa line hasn't been very good at sort of doing whatever they want their entire careers. I mean, we were talking about this line as being one of the best lines in all of hockey this year. Mm-hmm. So it's not. Let's not. one playoff series, it's an issue, it's a problem, there need to be changes. You know, after Winnipeg, you could make excuses that say, hey, they don't need to be changed, but after this, there needs to be a reevaluation of everything. Mm-hmm. I don't think Jofa's a part of that. I think that they're fine with those three guys. Also, all three of them are under contract for a while, and they're getting $18 million. So you're not going to – I mean, I just don't think – that was a problem in this series. I don't think it's a problem with the team.
7371025. Let's go to Adam in Portland, who is up next this morning on Morning Drive. What's up, Adam?
Man, I was going to go into hiding and just talk to y'all in like August, but I decided to, you know, grow up this time and try to get it together. I thought it was a good season, man. All things considered, they started out hot, and then I think Austin Watson probably played a bigger role with this team than what I initially gave him credit for, as far as, you know, his suspension, and then he comes back, and then he has to go into hiding again, and then he comes back, and, you know, he's the only guy who scored. He looked more physical than Dallas, and he's the only person on our team who I think did that. So, yeah. All things considered, man, I thought it was a pretty good season from them. I thought Dallas looked like a much better hockey team all the way around.
It's not close.
And while I'm sad and I'm upset that we're not playing into June, I thought Dallas was better, man. And you know what? I'm not going to say blow up the whole team, but PK, man, like I loved him. I still love him. I think he's a good guy. I just don't want to play him for my hockey team anymore, man. He ran the point on the worst power play ever, and he gives up goals like crazy, man. Do something with that guy. But other than that, man, whatever. You know, don't blow up my whole team. See you next year.
Quickly on Austin Watson, he did take a stupid penalty last night, mm-hmm. and he had a terrible turnover in Game 5. So he made up for it mm-hmm. last night with a big goal because he happened to be standing there when the puck fell to his stick. But the blowing it up of the team versus I think last year you can make excuses, and I think this is an interesting conversation. Last year you can make excuses. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're 7 game of the second round against the second-best team in the entire world. All right, we lost that game. We're going to keep it together. Let's try again. I don't think you can make that argument after being a division champion and getting bounced in the first round by a team that was a wild card team. I don't think you can – everything needs to be on the table and reevaluated, and that means changes, including the coaching staff, not the mm-hmm. head coach. But I think one of the two assistants is probably going to be – I would not be shocked if one of the two assistants is changed or if they bring in somebody extra. And I think one of the defensemen could get moved as well, as to Adam's point, PK might be the guy.
Yeah, and then PK made I think PK played good this series, but he did have a blunder last night. Either you take out the puck or you take out the man, and you took out neither.
It's terrible decision-making.
Yeah, it's just you were in a position where you had an opportunity to do one or the other, and you just basically stood there, and they end up scoring. I just need this front line to – because I'm watching – and I know Washington lost yesterday. I know they did. But I'm watching Ovechkin, and that dude is just nasty. But I know.
That's like watching Adrian Peterson compared to Javon Ringer.
That dude is just – and I look at that Jofa line, and I'm like, somebody on there got to be like Ovechkin.
Forsberg's
got some
yes, but
some power
Ovechkin
like
show up.
This
he
is what
shows
I did,
up.
This is what I did a month ago. Yeah. I gave you guys the last 20 cup winners, and I know the Ovechkins don't grow on trees. They're once-in-a-generation type players, but if you don't have one of these elite guys, I think it was 16 of the last 20 winners have had a ridiculous goal scorer mm-hmm. and a guy in the top 25 in points. That's why I brought up the structure of the way this team is created.
And that's a great debate. I do think Victor Arvidsson was third in the NHL in scoring per game. So the only two guys that scored more goals, I believe, per game than Victor Arvidsson was Alexander Ovechkin and Leon Draisaitl. So
if
you go per game, he scored almost 0.6 goals per game. You look at that, he set a franchise record. You know, Ryan Johansson, first Predator player with, I believe, 50 assists, right? 50 assist season. He's second or third.
Trevor Ovechkin.
He's getting pretty old, actually.
I don't care. I still take
him. But to your point, like, what's interesting about the Carolina game last night, so I was looking at the numbers, and I'm not going to pretend to be a Carolina mm-hmm. Hurricanes expert, but they put up the numbers for Justin Williams, the captain for the Carolina Hurricanes, mm-hmm. in elimination games. And the guy's numbers
are, he's a beast.
He's got like 15 goals in like 23 elimination games. He's got 27 points, and he scores again last night. Like, it's about showing up when your team needs you the most. And so I'm not like, again, Jofa was that. Philip Forsberg was that dominant star the last 2 years in the playoffs. He scored, you know, viral sensation Twitter social media goals last year. He helped carry his team to Stanley Cup final the year before. So Forsberg has done it. Johansson has done it. Arvidsson has been on and off in the postseason. So the problem is you're not going to get rid of Arvidsson. He's the, you know, again, you're not getting rid of any of those guys. I think those three are sort of, if you want to say everything's on the table, I think those three and Lavi are the three that are sort of off the table, if that makes sense.
Okay, we will continue on with your calls, 737-1025. We'll get to Jim. We'll get to everybody else on hold. When we come back, it's Morning Drive. Jeremy Roenick coming up at 8 o'clock. Stay there. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Well, unfortunately, now that the Predators are out, man, and I know you were getting your energy levels up and you were feeling good about the playoffs, and now you're kind of bummed. But don't let it get to you, because I know when once guys get bummed, they tend to get sick. But this is the thing I want you to do. Now that you're bummed, now that you have a little time, go see my good friends over at Cool Springs MD, all right? Over the years, more men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and his wife Daphne, along with that experienced staff of theirs, give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men of Brentwood, Nashville, and the surrounding areas in Tennessee. So there's not a spot that they haven't helped a man with improving their immune system, energy levels, and cognitive functions. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And there's no better time than now to achieve it, to achieve that healthy lifestyle. What are you waiting on, man? The playoffs is over. I know the draft is a couple of days away, but in between the playoffs and the draft, you can do this, all right? So pick up that phone right now, and these 10 digits you need to call to make an appointment. 615-660-6900, 615-660-6900, or visit their website at coolspringsmd.com.
Pierre, what do you think made the ultimate difference in the outcome of this series?
I think it's too big of a brush to paint it, Adam. You'd have to go game by game. You know, tonight for me, we could have used one more goal. You know, so I thought we did a lot of good things. The guys competed hard, and at the end of the day, in a 1-1 game, you could use one more goal. You know, there's things that I thought we cleaned up from the previous games, but you'd have to go game by game to break that whole thing down. In the end, you know, they got it done tonight. We didn't.
That was your head coach, Peter Laviolette. And boy, it sounds like my man Lavi needs a little time away, a little vacation.
A lozenge.
A little throat lozenge.
I'm assuming you don't go hellfire and brimstone after you lose a season.
No.
Like, you go in
What's the point?
Right, like there's no point. So I'm assuming that wasn't in the postgame. I'm assuming that was just a 6-game after an 82-game grind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, take a vocal break there.
Well, yes. Mm-hmm. 737.
And then answer some stinking questions for the Preds fans out there.
We'll get you a cup of throat coat tea, and you'll be good to go. 737-1025 is the number. We'll get to your tweets as well. Let's get to Jim in Clarksville as we continue on with this Predators autopsy here on a Tuesday. What's up, Jim?
From my perspective, the thought that our smaller players are the problem, I don't think that's the case. I think that it's a case that in the last 4 years, that team has played the equivalent of five seasons. So if you're going to put these small players in the league, you've got to cut down the regular season or you've got to shorten the playoffs.
Yeah, Jim, we appreciate the call. I'm not sure I agree or follow either one of those points.
I mean, listen, we can have a separate discussion, which is we all believe that all of these seasons are too long, right? NASCAR, baseball, basketball, hockey. Football's the only one that's too short, according to fans, not the players. All these seasons are too long, so we can have that discussion. It has nothing to do with the – like, they don't allow short players into the league. You just earn your way into the league.
It's like we got to have these many short guys. No.
And in fact, every rule change that's gone into effect in both basketball and hockey has, and frankly football, is geared towards allowing more freedom of movement, motion, speed, offense, and skill to be showcased more, which is why Victor Arvidsson can score 34 goals and be the all-time leading scorer in single-season Predators
history. That's why Grimaldi can come in and do what he does.
Exactly.
Ellis.
The game has changed.
You know, it's changed in a good way, I think. You know, they're allowing these guys that – they're allowing a space for these smaller guys to play. And that's good for hockey because these all smaller guys can get up and down. Now, when you get in the playoffs, it becomes a little bit more difficult. You got to protect those smaller guys. You know, but for the most part, you know, Arvidsson, like you said, Braden, Arvidsson has, you know, he's been worth the salt for the most part. It's just this particular series, he was a no-show. And I'm pretty sure going into the playoffs, Dallas, he was number one. I mean, the Joe Fallon, obviously, but I think Arvidsson, their main thing was to stop Arvidsson.
Well, and Johansson didn't have much of an impact either, even though he scored a goal and had an assist. Forsberg was the guy you noticed the most, which it should be the case because he's the best player. But you noticed him the most throughout
but
the course of the series.
But he didn't give you
He didn't finish.
Yeah, he didn't finish it all.
Yeah. Listen, they have 4 points total.
Yeah.
So
2 goals, 4 points.
I mean, listen, Rocco Grimaldi had more goals. The second line, Smith, Granlund, and Turris had 3 goals. They each scored. Victor Arvidsson had 0 points. So we'll see.
7371025. Speaking of the Stars, let's go to Dallas, and we welcome in Noah to Morning Drive. Noah, what's going on?
Hello. Yeah.
Hey, Noah, you going to rub our face in it?
Yeah, are you trolling
us?
Oh, okay.
No. trust me, I'm actually a Predators fan.
Okay.
Dallas. I used to live in the Nashville area, so I just called in because I saw the tweet. I'm actually heading to work in a little bit, and I'm already dreading that because everybody knows I'm the one Predators fan.
Yeah.
But, I was watching the game last night, and if you ask me, I think there's a couple of questions that should be considered. I mean, I'm not the most knowledgeable person, and obviously I'm not trained to make any of these decisions.
Well, neither are we.
Yeah, but we do it.
I mean, if you just had, the questions I'd, looked into, I guess I'll try to keep them simple. Kyle Turris has just really not been the greatest addition since we picked him up last year.
That's being very kind, Noah.
don't get me wrong, but when we could have gotten, I think it was Matt Duchene, right? Because there was a bunch of talks about getting him. It's just, I think that what we could have gotten would have been much better. I mean, not only that, but I think Duchene's on the, one of them went to the Jets.
Yeah, well, and so, no, first of all, hang in there in Dallas, my friend. Because I lived in Austin as a Packers fan in the early 90s. So just imagine the Packers losing to the Dallas Cowboys every single year in the playoffs and then having to go to school the next day as like an eighth grader. Just, it wasn't fun for me. Kyle Turris got traded, Duchene got traded again though. So it's hard to know if you could have gotten Duchene instead of Turris because Duchene then got flipped again from Colorado to Ottawa down to Columbus, right? So he's been traded twice. It's hard to know. Now, we were having a conversation during the break. Could you have traded a defenseman for Matt Duchene instead of making the Turris trade the year before and keeping Sam Girard and getting rid of a defenseman? Because now your three big bullet points, Nick, I think a coaching staff change underneath Peter Laviolette. I think trying to move on from Kyle Turris and maybe breaking up the defense core. Those are probably the three things that you look at if you're David Poile. And today it's PK Subban that looks like the most tradable commodity because I'm not sure you take on Ryan Ellis' contract if you're somebody else. Yeah. But then Ryan Ellis was coming off one of the great performances in postseason history, although injured. Could you have moved Ryan Ellis, kept Sam Girard, and still gotten Kyle Turris or Matt Duchene? Who knows? I mean, we can't we can't really go back and think about all that stuff because it's impossible to know what the different maturations of all that stuff was.
But speaking of Ellis, Bob Williams sent us a tweet. He says, Ryan Ellis has been an absolute ghost in two consecutive playoff series. So if you go back to last year with Winnipeg, you go to this series this year in the first round, and we're entering into, what is it? Is it an 8-year, $50 million contract? Mm-hmm. 6.25.
Yeah, he goes up $4 million per year.
I'm sorry, and look, you can sit there and say the counter to that is, well, he's still not a top 20 paid blue liner in the league, so it's still a relatively good deal. I look at it this way: he's an undersized defenseman, and I know some of his numbers this year statistically would have said it's kind of a Ryan Ellis type year. But show me where the impact was. Because I gave the comparison a couple of weeks ago on this show. I said, it's kind of like a baseball player who hit .292, he had 21 homers, 93 ribbies, and you're like,
dang, that's a really good season.
Like, where did that translate on the field as far as wins, losses, or moments where you're like, well, that was a monster performance? I didn't see that from Ryan Ellis. I think it's just like there.
I think you need to bring the 290, 21, and 93 numbers down. Okay. down
275,
yeah, there we go.
15, and 70.
There you go. Well, that makes more sense. Here's the thing. He's been very good for 5 years. Like, this isn't a guy who just, you know, this is his second season or his third season. He's played for the Predators for like 7 seasons. So the first 5 years, 6 years of this man's career have been pretty darn good. So I think he deserves, like Subban, the benefit of the doubt to say, you need to bounce back. Now, he did set a career high in points this year. To your point, Nick, what does that mean? Last year it meant a lot more because he was scoring goals in critical spots. He didn't do that this year. Power play, didn't do that this year. Defense in the last two playoff series, didn't do any of that this year. Got knocked around, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know how you weigh the first 5 years of really good, high-quality hockey and two bad playoff series. I don't know how you weigh those two things.
Well, I mean, it goes back to, because you mentioned this, Nick. You know, you have good numbers, but how are they impacting the game? Are these numbers, when they need them,
they feel hollow?
Yeah, it's like the Blake Bortles. You know, he threw for 4,000 yards, but a lot of that was for nothing. You know, because they were coming back.
Blake Bortles had five really good seasons before that, though, where it meant a lot, and you won a bunch of stuff.
But what I'm saying is that the numbers tend to be sort of, you know, misleading because, yes, you had some numbers, but were they impactful numbers? And did you go on this tear like
that? I mean, last year he did.
That people around the league notice? I don't know.
Dude had 32 points in 44 games last year. That's almost on pace for a 60-point season, and was plus 26 and was scoring big. To your points, it was scoring big goals with 3 minutes to go in the game, down one. Ellis would deliver a big goal. Power play from the blue line, Ellis would deliver a big goal. So he has done it for 5 years. It's how do we evaluate this? I don't like the Blake Bortles analogy because Blake Bortles has sort of always sucked.
But I'm just saying, I'm saying number wise, are they impactful numbers? Now, yes, I think he's given a lot of leeway because of the seasons prior, the previous seasons. But this year, when they needed him, he was a no-show. And I think sports is all about what have you done for me lately. And I think what happens is the fans, because he's your guy, you tend to forget about what he's doing now and always remember about what he did. Now, if he was on another team, you'd be screaming, oh, he's not having a good season, not having a good season. Well, if you're going to scream that if he's on another team, you should do the same even more because he's on your team.
I would just say this and kind of to summarize it and wrap it up. You know, we always bang on P.K. Subban when there's somebody that's not living up to expectation on the blue line.
That's true.
Well, Matthias Ekholm had a postseason that he should just forget about for the rest of his life. That was one of the worst performances I've seen from who I would say was probably, along with Josi, the best blue liner on the team in the regular season.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, it's almost like Subban and Ekholm like flipped roles in the postseason. I mean, listen, again, this is oversimplification, but everybody's guilty. You're out of the playoffs as a division champion in the first round. You're all guilty, every one of you. Even the guys who played well. You're on a team that lost in the first round when you shouldn't have. And you were favored by Vegas to go in and win. You're a two-time division champion. There are no excuses. In fact, the conversation last year about how this organization and this team and the players and the GM all decided together we're going to stick it out, you don't deserve another chance. You've been given three chances now with this group. You don't deserve another chance. So that means maybe an assistant coach has to go. Maybe a defensive player gets traded. Maybe Kyle Turris is gone. Who knows what that means? But this group sort of doesn't get a chance to say, because Pekka, after, now again, you don't want to go into a locker room after losing for the final game of your season and ask players to reflect on the entire season. It's hard to do that. But Pekka last night is saying the right things, and he's saying stuff like, you know, we think we can do it. We have all the pieces we need. I'm paraphrasing here. But, like, we feel like we are the same story as last year, right? Like, hey, mm-hmm. Give us another chance. Give us another chance. Leave us together. I don't think this group deserves the chance to do that anymore. Like, I mean, I know that sounds harsh, but you've been given the chance. And you've had 2 years of this where you were the best team in the division, and you've won one playoff series. You're 2-5 at home in the last 2 years in the playoffs or something like that. Like, you need to be better. I think that calls for change. Not blowing up the roster, right, but change.
Jeremy Roenick will join us coming up in 15 minutes. We'll come back. One more segment of calls, 737-1025 if you want to get in. Here on Morning Drive on Nashville's Best Sports Talk, ESPN 102.5 a game.
It's a tough pill to swallow. I mean, you know, it's came in here obviously wanting to take the series back to Nashville, and I felt we gave ourselves a good opportunity to do that. They battled hard all series. They definitely played really, really well, and it's just a tough pill to swallow right now.
PK Subban last night in defeat. Well, I think we would agree, probably the best blue liner in this series, that though by and large he played relatively well. He certainly had some turnovers, but compared to Ekholm, compared to Ellis, I thought he had a relatively decent series. We'll get your calls now, 615-737-1025. Jeremy Roenick, top of the hour. Let's get to Kenneth in Columbia next on Morning Drive. What's up, Kenneth?
Yes, I was just calling about the power play, because I look at the way other teams do the power play, and I look at what the Predators do, and I don't understand why they have a player, whether it be Simmons or Boyle, standing right directly in front of the goal, because it seems like it limits the amount of space that's available for the other Predators to be able to score.
Are you asking about why players stand in front of the net?
No, I'm asking why the Predators do it that way on the power play. I mean, I understand that the strategy is to prevent the goalkeeper from being able to see, but it seems like it's counterproductive, because they're not able to – they're getting in the way of the other players being able to score.
Right, but you know that's how they scored their goal last night, right? Was like Brian Boyle standing in front of the net, all 6'6 of them tipping the puck, and then another 6'4 guy standing in front of the net and putting it away, right? Like that – I mean, I don't see your point.
No, you don't. Just a minute.
I tried.
Thanks, Kenneth. We disagree. We tried.
I think getting disruption in front of the goaltender is good in every situation in hockey. I don't think there's a bad situation. And Brian Boyle, let's listen. If we're gonna rip on whoever, whether it's David Poyle for going and getting Simmons, who didn't, you know, bizarre injury, right? Gets hurt with a puck on the knee. And wasn't a factor in this series, wasn't a huge factor. Granlund was a factor in this series. I thought he played good hockey in this series. I would just wish you would have seen that the entire season. Maybe that was him gelling. Maybe we'll see more of him next year. I think if you listen to Stillman, you're just going to hear how he sucks. He is a far more skilled player, and I think you saw some of that last night than he exhibited in the regular season. But Brian Boyle was a tremendous acquisition. Like that guy came in and immediately helped out on the power play, immediately helped out standing in front of the net, immediately did what they wanted him to do. And, oh, by the way, an unbelievable story, surviving cancer and all this other stuff. Like, Boyle is...
I'm surprised he actually played with the injury in the series.
That's incredible. The appendectomy, you know, I was sitting there watching, like, how tender and sensitive do you think the part of your body... Like, I don't know where they cut the appendectomy.
It's like
the appendix
right,
out of your
like
body.
The, It's right below your navel.
Like above your pelvic area?
Yeah, right
area.
Above. Yeah, because I had my, and it's not, I'm telling you, that is one bad, when your appendix,
okay.
Oh my goodness, yeah. it is the worst pain.
But the sort, like the tenderness of the scar or the incision or whatever is protected by some padding at least, is what I was curious about. And because I don't know, I guess I could have looked it up on the internet. But I think, so Boyle, Sissons, and Grimaldi, two of those are restricted free agents, and then Boyle is an unrestricted free agent. Those are the three guys that I would expect David Poyle to re-sign. So if those three of the group I expect to be brought back next year, so I would make the effort to bring Boyle back if he wants to, right?
I'll tell you this much, as far as bringing guys back, and I said earlier in the year when we were talking about the Wayne Simmons trade and, you know, what type of impact he'll have, I said Wayne Simmons will not be the difference between this team making a deep run and, you know, going out in the first round. He's not that great of a player, but I also said after that I don't know how you let the guy walk after what you gave up. After this playoff series and late down the stretch, I don't think you bring Wayne Simmons back.
Oh, I don't.
No.
He's done.
I think giving up Ryan Hartman, while I do like Ryan Hartman eventually as a solid contributor on a team somewhere, I don't think you can be pot committed on this. You have to look at Wayne Simmons and if he's asking for $6 million, you're like, nope. Mm-hmm. If he's asking for four, maybe you think about it in a one-year deal or a two-year deal, but probably not. The unrestricted free agents, and again, this is very early in this process, Wayne Simmons, Brian Boyle, Cody McLeod, Zach Ronaldo are all unrestricted free agents. The two restricted free agents you would bring back, I would assume Colton Sissons and Rocco Grimaldi are going to be getting pay raises and contracts. So I think you'd be foolish not to bring those two guys back.
Let's wrap up the first half of the show with Matt in Smyrna next on Morning Drive. What's up, Matt?
Hey, I just had a trade suggestion that I think they should look into. I think getting rid of PK, Turris, a first-round pick for Connor McDavid. McDavid's already said that he would like to come to Nashville. That would clear up $15 million in cap space for us to get him, and then we'd have a few million left over to re-sign people like Grimaldi and then do a assistant coaching change. And I think those trades would keep most of the team together, but I think they would help out in the long run.
Matt, appreciate the call. It's funny, I got a tweet 25 minutes ago from Aaron Kindle who said, to get your elite player like a Connor McDavid, he apparently wants out of Edmonton, give them Subban, Turris, another role player, and a pick. Heck, give them more if they want it. DeShane would be a nice backup plan. I don't know how realistic that is.
Yeah, that's my thing. Like, I mean, in theory, at their best, PK Subban, Kyle Turris, and something else for Connor McDavid isn't far-fetched. Now, if I'm Edmonton, I'm not doing that. But could you make if you could get three starting players for Connor McDavid, would you consider it? The problem is that Kyle Turris' value is at an all-time low, probably. Even though you pop in the tape of the playoff series and you probably like what you see, I don't, the whole season has been a dud for him. So it's a throwaway year. He's also a guy that scored 60 points. He's a 60-point scorer. I mean, it's not like this guy hasn't been good in the past and in Canada. So he's I believe he's from British Columbia, so he's from the Vancouver area, so maybe, you know, I know Edmonton's not exactly close, but it is that direction. Maybe there's some, I don't know. I think you'd have to sweeten the deal a lot with PK and Turris before you got Connor McDavid, but can you imagine summer radio in this town if Connor McDavid was on the roster?
I'll have to take my vacation for July back. I'll have to rescind it.
Holy moly. we would be counting down the days till training camp opened.
Yeah, we would.
So you could see what that guy looks like. And people have seen him at Bridgestone plenty for Edmonton, but my God.
All right. We will get to some NFL draft coming up in the second half of the show, but up next, the always outspoken Jeremy Roenick from the NHL on NBC. We'll talk to JR about all things Preds and the Stanley Cup playoffs. What did he make of an early exit? Because he was one that was certainly looking forward to making a return to Nashville in the months of May and June. Jeremy Roenick is next here on Morning Drive.